Work shouldn't feel like a drag, and you shouldn't have to sacrifice your soul for a job you love. Determined to rethink the future of work, she's out of her depth on purpose. With fresh ideas, interviews, and stories from her life on the road, meet Europe's newest digital nomad, Blair Palmer.
Hello, and welcome to episode 89 of A Brilliant Gamble. I hope you are really well. I have news, and the news is that we can see the end of our trip in sight. Now, we had planned to keep going certainly to the end of 2018, maybe even drifting into 2019, but an opportunity has come along that's really too good to miss, and it's just exactly what we want to do next after our brilliant gamble, and we don't want to miss the opportunity. So I am not going to talk too much about it. I want to do a show specifically about what our plans are and what our next brilliant gamble is going to be, but I wanted to let you know that we've got one more trip. We're heading off to Ireland next week, and we're going to be there for about 3 weeks, and then we'll be driving back through Wales, right through North Wales, where our journey began 6 months ago, and then heading back to Somerset, where we believe our journey will end for now. Anyway, our physical journey, of course, the journey of change is not going to end at all, because it's a whole new brilliant gamble and so many more lessons to learn. And as I say, I'm going to leave you on tender hooks for a little bit longer and tell you about that in a couple of weeks' time. But because this change for us is on the horizon, I thought it was the perfect time to talk to today's guest. Claire Russell is a coach and speaker, and she's an expert in the heroine's journey. Now, this is something that I started hearing about earlier on this year, probably. I don't think I'd heard about it before that. I'd heard of the hero's journey, of course, and I talk a lot about the hero's journey, and I work with clients on the hero's journey, and I speak about it from the stage. It's really a passion of mine, this hero's journey concept. But the heroine's journey is something I've only heard about quite recently. And as I say in my interview with Claire, I was a bit resistant. I think when you're such an expert and such a fan of a particular concept, and then you hear of something that's a sort of tweak or a build on that concept, there's a part of you, or certainly there was a part of me, that didn't want to know. I just wanted to stick with what I already knew and carry on telling that story and not confuse myself. However, after about 3 people mentioned the heroine's journey to me, I started to wonder maybe if I should find out something more about it. So I contacted Claire, and she was very gracious. She said she would come on the show and tell us all about it. So that is what we're doing today. We're learning all about the heroine's journey. The heroine's journey is applicable to you if you're a man as well as if you're a woman. And so that's absolutely fine. This is not exclusive just in the same way as the hero's journey is not exclusive just to men. So I hope you'll find it really interesting. You'll hear in the interview, I struggle a little, not just to get my head around what's different about the heroine's journey, but also to articulate my own journey through the lens of the heroine's journey. This is something that's brand new for me, so you'll hear the very real struggle, and I'm still working on that and will continue to work on that. And as I get my head around, maybe in terms of our next adventure, looking at that through the lens of the heroine's journey a little bit more than the hero's journey, I'll be able to share with you with a bit more clarity what I'm learning about that whole adventure. At the end of the interview, I will tell you about something that's coming up this week. So if you're listening to this podcast on the 11th of September 2018 or the 12th of September 2018, or even the 13th of September 2018, you will want to listen to the very end and find out about something I'm doing on the 14th of September 2018 that you can get involved in. So I'll tell you all about that at the end, but I don't want to put it off any longer. Let's go over to the lovely interview with Claire Russell. Claire, really good to see you. How are you today?
I'm really well, thank you very much. Good to be here, Blair.
I've been looking forward to this so much because I'm a big Hero's Journey fan. I talk about it a lot. People will have heard me talk about it on the show, but I had heard of this idea of the heroine's journey. And I thought, I don't want to change my mind about that, so I'm just not going to engage in it. But it's I've heard about it so many times now that I thought, hang on a minute, I'd better find out what this is all about. And you're the person to ask.
Well, I'm glad to be here. And you're right, it's less known, and somehow even just having the word heroine in there versus hero suddenly ignites something and gives it a bit of edge, and it's curious.
So why don't we start by talking about that journey? And I mean, actually, maybe it would be better to start with how you came across this concept of mm-hmm. the heroine's journey versus the hero's journey.
Well, as often happens with these things, and perhaps you can relate to this as well, you end up taking it before you find out what it is and how it transforms. And maybe that is part of our consciousness of ensuring that we really get it internally first. And so I think that was my first experience, was deciding many years ago now, over 10 years ago, to leave my 9-to-5 with no plan other than that, a knowledge that I needed to follow my intuition, and that I had just had this feeling that I was on a narrow path to success, and that where my interest lay was getting broader, on experiencing more of life, discovering more of who I was, and the only word I had for that was intuition. And that took me on quite a snowball journey of just learning a lot more about who I was and the capabilities we have as human beings that sometimes can just get a little bit narrowed in our professional lives, or my experience anyway of the work that I was doing. And it was my own process of discovery, as you probably hear the edges of the hero's journey in it. What might be slightly different is that there were keys for me, markers for me, which may look a little bit different than the hero's journey, such as following my intuition of going on a healing journey that was a lot about compassion. So instead of battling my shadows or my demons, it was about understanding them and incorporating them within me as strengths rather than things to be abandoned or shut away. And I think part of that journey is very, we'll talk more about the word feminine in a minute, but there's a lot of what sits in the heroine's journey that is very shadowy, especially for women, and is not denied, it can be denied, whether that is strong emotion, whether that is our bodies and all the intelligence there. And my journey was a lot about incorporating that. And then fast forwarding quite a few years later, on my journey of discovery and learning in coaching and meditation, alternative practices, I suddenly came across the goddess myths and the archetypes of the feminine held in mythology through time. And I had no idea why, but I was incredibly attracted to it. And I just wanted to learn more. And at that time, I had no idea about how symbology talks to our subconscious. Archetypes are very powerful things. I don't know whether you come across them, or even those things that you're attracted to in your life are probably an archetypal influence. They thunder past small talk. They talk to our symbolic being. They generally rise up a lot of emotion. A lot of things that you may not have even thought about for a while, but sit beneath the surface because it really talks to this deeper subconscious collective consciousness in which we sit. And I became introduced to those. I came across the myths of, at the start, Aphrodite, and then into Venus. And then that took me back into one of the primary earlier myths of the female archetype, which is Inanna, who's a Sumerian goddess. So she's right back at our original earliest writings on blocks of stone. And it told this myth and journey, which I'm going to very quickly summarize, of Inanna, this queen of heaven and earth, discovering that her sister, aka her shadow, in the underworld, had lost her husband, and she wanted to go down into the underworld and go and grieve with her and go and meet her in that. However, that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for the queen of heaven and earth, who's successful, shining light, etc., to go down there. So as she went down, she goes through these seven gateways, which are also the journey of the nine veils translated, and loses all her powers. She has to give off everything. I'll take off my bracelets of my doing in the world. I'll take off my crown of status, all of these items, to meet her sister and be compassionate with her and feel with her. That's basically the journey. And then the journey of coming up she takes her sister with her. She takes that energy with her. And that's the difference, is you're coming up whole, is a journey of wholing, integrating, of going, oh, okay, there's good stuff in this area, whatever it is, in our anger, in all the things we might think about as being quite ugly. There's a lot of beauty and a lot of power in that, which when we bring it back with us can transform our life.
Wow. Let's dig into that a little bit deeper. So tell us the heroine's journey story then, because, you know, the hero's journey is really call to adventure, rejection of the call, some sort of catalytic event, off we go. It incorporates the belly of the whale. It incorporates lots of tests, allies, a mentor, this aha moment. The apotheosis, then fighting the final battle and winning, the call to return, rejection of the call to return, and then off we go back to life as kind of normal life, but nothing is the same because, you know, something was changed, the hero was changed in the journey. Yeah. And we're very sort of familiar with that, whether we know it or not, as you're saying, because we've seen the movies and we've read books and novels, and they all follow the same. They all seem to follow the same journey. So how is the heroine's journey different?
Firstly, there's a lot of similarities, because that journey of transformation that you explained is so fundamental to all of us. What might be different is how we take that journey. So the strengths that we discover in ourselves and the process by which we take that journey and the things we're working with on that journey. So you mentioned the movies. And it's always a good reference because we kind of get it. You know, the stories are there nicely for us. So, you know, Luke Skywalker, we know he's the hero and he has all his, his friends and allies, his mentors that help him on going into that journey of the underworld of, dealing with the dark side and finding his lightsaber of truth and clarity and phallicness to support him on that. And also he's dealing with the healing journey of the masculine because it's his father, right? So when we contrast that, now what's very interesting actually in our culture currently is there is a lot more heroines' journeys coming out and they look distinctly different. So the first one of those was really Brave, the movie, the Disney movie, which is Merida, who is the archetypal energy of Diana. But she is this brave archer, etc. And she's given the choice in her life of, okay, you're going to be successful by getting married, by basically aligning yourself to the masculine. And she goes, I don't think so. I'm going to take my own journey. It's all about independence and freedom. And I think freedom is a key piece, which is in both journeys as well, but it might just look different for the feminine within us. But she's a bit different. She doesn't get these like wonderful group of allies. She has her horse, which is really interesting because that's the masculine energy, but she also has to engage with people who are going to be allies but they're not currently, which is the wildness in her mother, who tries, so it's discovering back through the lineage of where, before we were tame feminine, before we were acclimatized society, what did our wildness say? What it can be pretty darn assertive and instinctual to start with, and really trust in the intelligence of the body, and she also has to befriend the wise woman who looks on the outside, you know, ugly, old, hag-like, all of those kind of things, but she has the wisdom, she has the insight and the experience and the magic and the mystery that is so essential to the journey. So there's maybe that's giving you a feel of the different energies that you're befriending, coming to know on the journey, which might look a bit different from the hero's journey. How does that resonate as you're...
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is so new for me, that in the hero's journey, the hero basically needs to destroy the dark past. Whereas in the heroine's journey, the heroine has to incorporate and embrace the darkness within herself, whether it's illustrated as another character or whether it is actually within. Is that kind of it?
Yeah, completely. So there is this, yeah, befriending, understanding consciously these aspects of us. So we, for example, there might be parts of us which we just think are unacceptable for whatever reason that is, whether that is our anger, or whether that is our sensitivity, or whether that is our sexuality or our bodies, all of these parts which often sit in the shadow of the feminine, whether you're a man or a woman, sit in the shadow of the feminine, have huge power and strength. And it's about claiming those back for ourselves in the conscious way. And that involves quite a lot of empathy, compassion. Doesn't mean you can't be fierce, doesn't mean you can't use that lightsaber as well, but there is a balance, because most of us, man or woman, have taken the hero's journey. We know how to do that well. We know how to, you know, clear our thoughts, choose our direction of travel, and just stick to it come what may. And the heroine's journey says, that's fantastic, keep all of that, and we need a balance and we need to integrate, and we need to include, and we need to be whole, and we need to bring all of that to our lives in order to thrive. But that's maybe not very popular. So for example, my classic example is Arianna Huffington's book Thrive. I don't remember when that came out. It got a lot of bad press, right? And it's not heavyweight enough, it's too idealistic. And she was basically giving a book of stats on, we need more sleep, we need to have purpose in our lives, we need to thrive and have well-being. And she was talking about the heroine's journey. Actually, very directly, she was talking about it, as her chapter titles are the outputs of the heroine's journey from Maureen Murdoch. But it was almost too controversial. People didn't get it. It was a whole other way of seeing things. However, I think over the years, things have shifted and people are starting to get at that. We know to really thrive, we need to be inclusive for ourselves and for others, and to bring that wholeness.
So how do we go from, this is maybe too big a question, but you know, we're so used to setting a goal, mm-hmm. and then embarking on the journey, and we experience the stages of that journey pretty predictably, the hero's journey stages. We're so used to that. What's different if we embrace the heroine's journey? Do we need to do anything differently? Do we need to embark on the journey differently?
My experience of working with clients around that is it's often about utilizing more of our capacity. So often, so I work with a lot of women who have achieved quite a lot, that, you know, they may be setting up on their next big achievement, but they're aware that they can't do it the same, and they want to feel more fulfillment. So yes, the success is important. Yes, coming back with the boon is important. We're not saying don't do that, but realize that is your permission slip to be more of who you want to be. And in discovering more of who you want to be, there's a broadening and an including of self. So for example, we do take the clarity of the mind and the goal setting and all of that, but what about being heartful in that? So our society's learnt mindfulness, which is because we're better at that side of things. But what about heartfulness? What about the energy of the body? And maybe even controversially, but I work a lot with women on the energy of the womb and our instinctive self. And that requires attuning ourselves to maybe voices within us, intelligences within us that we haven't fully heard in our life but really wants to speak. And when that comes in, it can really shift us to that next level. Mostly it's about fulfillment, I would say.
Do they really blend? I'm wondering, so I'm really in two minds about this. So we're just coming, well, we're not coming towards the end of this particular adventure that we're on, because we've still got a few more months to go, but we're starting to plan the next one. And I really love having not a goal exactly, but a vision, a new vision or a new adventure that I'm embarking on. And that adventure doesn't exactly have an end point, but it has a sort of, this is what I want it to look like at a certain point. It'll continue to evolve. So I really love having that, something to look forward to, something that I'm working on that is a journey in that sense. But I'm wondering if, in order to really embrace the heroine's journey, do you need to let go of that or hold it less tightly, or can you have a lovely focused goal with an endpoint and all of that, plus
do the heroine, embrace your inner wild?
Yes. I think you can. I do think it's also a shift in the heroine's journey that says, and so it's I haven't talked in detail about Maureen Murdoch's journey, which is where a lot of this came from in terms of thinking. Really recommend you looking it up, Heroine's Journey, The Journey to Wholeness, if anyone wants to see the book online. She talks about it as, and I agree, it's about integrating masculine and feminine within us. So what you talked about, that goal focus, this kind of what I would say is yang driven, visionary, imagined, you know, that amazing joyful energy you get when you're on purpose and you're loving it, right? That is, we want that in our life. I want that in my life too. At the same time, I believe that I can achieve more flow, alignment, enjoyment when I bring in my feminine within that, and she has a lot to offer, which is the receptive, the intuitive, the feeling embodied spirit intelligence. So whether we're a man or woman, we have both of these aspects in us, and it's about that integration journey. So the heroine's journey starts with a separation from the feminine, according to Maureen, and then it's about reintegrating that in a way that we want to. So we may have taken on stereotypes of that, and so a stereotype is, for example, you can't do both. You can't do both the goal-focused and the sensitive feeling side of us. Or you can't do, you know, the powerful career and the family. And the first step is we can, once we really choose and engage in this in a very real way. So I would say, yes, you can bring those two together. But what it might mean is, exactly as you said, to hold it more lightly. So I talk about keeping consciousness in the result, but also letting go of attachment to that result, which is, it's a very subtle thing and it kind of has to be felt. But very similar to what you're saying, Blair.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's part of the battle. So for myself, you know, I thought that that if we sold our house and set off in an RV, I would be changed, that the situation, because I was in a different circumstance, I would feel different. And I didn't feel, I did feel a bit different, but all the same issues still came up for me. And so what I realized was that the change that you make in your life, the sort of external change that you might make in your life, is really only a trigger for discovering what work there is to do inside, and that the real journey is doing the inner work, and that you'll achieve the goal or you won't achieve the goal, but I mean that will really become quite irrelevant to the whole thing. And I wonder if there's part of the battle is, but I don't want to let go of the goal. I you know, something very appealing about it and very rewarding about having a goal that you're moving towards. And there definitely seems to be a few moments in my experience where I had to just let it go without beating myself up for giving up. Mm-hmm. It's very prevalent in our society. Don't give up, push on through, feel the burn. And I think we worry about, well, is this feminine side of me, truly my feminine side, allowing me to be compassionate with myself or to trust my intuition, or is it just laziness and procrastination?
Mm. So it's so interesting, isn't it? And it's so I find it really interesting when people have that point that you described of, I don't want to let it go. And the heroine's journey is, okay, we're going in there. So tell me about that. How does it feel in your body? Where is it sitting? What, if you work with a dialogues method, you know, what voice is that? What wisdom is in that piece? And I have clients who have these two very, you know, very career driven women, you know, really at the top of their game, but in finding this balance between what they call, you know, conquer the world voice and well-being voice, how those two come together, really important. And it's going in. Every time you find that point where you think, oh, there's a battle, there's a conflict, how can that be my point in to something deeper? And you also alluded to what I call the myth of productivity. If I just do more or just do this, then I have what I want and then I'll be happy. And I think that is, it's certainly a myth that I have spent a lot of my life being driven by, and I'm always learning, attuning into, is this authentic to me, or is this something that's coming from outside? How can I create the balance and really choose priorities and therefore actually be more effective and efficient as a result.
The battles that the hero fights may be slightly different to the battles that the heroine fights, because these battles are maybe more conflicts within the self between two ideologies or two ways of seeing the world.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example from another myth, Lakshmi, who's this Vedic goddess. So the battle itself and the conflict itself is the grounds for creativity in the heroine's myth. It's like the alchemy of these two coming together. So it's not, you know, you have gods and demons or you know, are in a psyche, shadow and light. And it's not that light has to overcome shadow. It's just that when you bring this together, alchemy is going to happen and something new is going to form. And it's going to be absolutely amazing if you can hold that space. So, for example, in the myth of Lakshmi, she is this, what she provides is abundance and joy, but she's born out of this huge raging battle of gods and demons in the ocean. And out of this churning ocean of chaos and rage and everything else, joy is born, and she is the elixir. So just to give you a flavour of the difference that comes from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about the triggers or the catalyst for embarking on this journey, because my experience of the hero's journey is it's something quite tangible. So I say quite tangible because I also know from my own experience, it's also to do with something with life stage and, you know, feelings of discontent and, you know, being unsettled. So I've experienced that as well. But what really triggers it is it seems to be an opportunity. And then you reject the opportunity. And then for one reason or another catalytic event, you accept this call to adventure to take this opportunity. That's always the way I talk about it. And when I talk to audiences about it, I say, you know, should I take that job in America? Should I take the promotion? Should I have a baby? Should we move to the country? They're quite tangible things. Are the triggers or the catalysts different for the heroine's journey?
So there's the inner and outer, again, is what you're talking about. And the generally is an outer. And it's really interesting to hear how you've described it. Is you're talking about the threshold moment as pre it happening, as awareness pre that this opportunity is coming. I think it is probably quite true that I see a lot of women just post. There is this something's happened. So they've had the baby. They've taken the big job, whatever it might be, and it's opened up another level of understanding. When I talk about the threshold for women, there's an internal recognition of that. So, for example, they may have experienced something physically with their body, and so because the heroine's journey is about embodiment, whatever that might be, again, opportunity or challenge, something around their relationships or their sexualities. They might be dreaming incredibly vivid. So there's just an aliveness of the inner world which has come alive. And those dreamings can be wonderful or nightmarish, but there's an intensity of personal experience. And that would also be, for example, a habitual way of responding to something, that whether that is anxiety or anger or overwhelm, is becoming more intense. So there's a requirement to kind of go within to look at something. It's something is bubbling up from within, and there's a choice point, and that choice point is, do I push it back down or do I choose to see that as medicine? And that can be, you know, an external opportunity. On paper, your life's looking great, you've just got the big job, you're in the perfect relationship, and what you're feeling on the inside is complete chaos, wondering whether you can achieve it, complete imposter syndrome, whatever it might be. And that's potentially a little inkling into the heroine's journey. Yeah,
that's really, really interesting. And of course, it brings up for me this something you and I talked about, which is before we embarked on our trip, we'd already decided to go. We already had the van. In fact, I picture the moment, which was that we were doing some decorating inside our first van to get ready. And I was filled with rage that there was too much to do. My daughter was irritating me. She wasn't helping. And I just felt completely overwhelmed. And the rage was so intense, there was no containing it, and it happened a few times, and it was quite scary actually. Now I am prone to, you know, outbursts of shoutiness, but this was a level beyond. My interpretation of that was, well, we're under a lot of stress because we're just about to do this big thing and probably menopause. So I headed off to the doctors and got myself some HRT, which did slightly put a lid on it. But not entirely. So would you interpret, because based on what you've just said, I now look back on that and think that was not a sudden thing. That was a sort of escalating situation around my anger, which has largely abated now, although not entirely. Would you say that if I noticed that kind of thing again, I might be more aware that some change was needed, or that there was some embracing to do?
Yeah, completely. So when my clients experience intense emotion, I know that there's something really interesting happening, and I'm really excited for them because
this is so irritating for them.
Because, you know, where did that emotion come from? It's within you. It's part of you. It's this huge firepower of energy, you know, and especially for the feminine to be rageful, angry, you know, to be a bitch, that, you know, that's not allowed. And that is our shadow, which we never, ever want to be seen as. So, but yet it holds power. It holds our capacity to veto. It holds our capacity to be fierce for what we truly love. And often there is, you know, it's kind of like turning on a tap that's not been turned on for quite a while. There could be some icky water that comes out initially, right? But then there is going to be this just, you know, source of nourishment and well-being underneath that, and personal power. So I suppose my question in return to you would be, you know, how has that fierceness potentially come out over this journey? How might it be feeding a different way of being Blair in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to really think about that question for a minute, because, you know, that definitely one of the things that's changed, I think, as a result of this journey. So there is some triggers for stress in my life right now, but they're not particularly triggering that same kind of response. Little sparks of it, but not the intensity. And I've been thinking about that and thinking, why isn't this stressing me out as much as it is stressing other people out? Yeah. And I wonder if it's because life is more a reflection now of how I want it to be. And although my needs aren't entirely met yet, they are more met. I have more space. I have more freedom, as you mentioned before. I'm less busy. So my life is much, much less busy, which was a conscious choice to then have space to breathe. So if I need to meditate in the morning, or if I want to, or if I want to get up a bit early and spend a bit of time on my own, I can. So I wonder if it doesn't feel quite deep enough for what you're suggesting, but I just wonder if a different way of constructing my life has given me more space, which then means that the anger, it's still there, but it's not as untamed, I guess. Well, that's not even the right way to put it, because not like I've tamed it. Is this what your clients sound like in your sessions? The language is just, how would you interpret? I'm interested in your language about what I've just been waffling on.
So firstly, I think what you're sharing about rage and anger being our first point of call to create boundaries is true, absolutely. It's it's a power to create space and safety. And how we handle that. And then there is the movement from rage. So the aspect of the heroine's journey that we talked a little bit about is integration and wholeness. So again, referring back to the hero's journey, you bring the elixir back, right, as the hero. As the heroine, you are the container for that elixir, and you bring yourself back, and you're constantly moving with that. So you need to create space in your container to hold all of this power and medicine. And so there is power and medicine in assertiveness and clarity of what really matters. And so the little things don't matter anymore, right? Because why would you be triggered about those little things, like maybe not knowing where you're going to sleep in 2 weeks' time or whatever it is on your journey, which might completely freak other people out, when you realize, actually, that's fine. You know, this is what matters. So creating your space and container. Yeah, I would say that. And then that anger and rage can translate in something else. A very similar energy to anger and rage is laughter. Now, I don't know whether you're laughing more now, but it can start to shift slightly. It's very interesting.
Yeah, in fact, we are laughing a lot. And I was just writing something today about laughing so much that a little bit of wee comes out. That's when you know that the laughter is like proper from the guts, because you've got no more bladder control. You're not holding anything in. So yeah, that's a fantastic kind of laughter. And there is more of that.
That is it, isn't it? When we can fully embrace and hold consciously, you know, there might be that phase, as you were describing, where it doesn't feel very conscious and it feels a bit out of control. But when you can hold all of that consciously, you feel more, you experience the highs and the sweetness of life, and you laugh more, and because you can be a container for all of your life experience.
Beautiful. You mentioned something earlier on that that I want to go back to, which was about womb intelligence. And I read something that you wrote where you said that there are three intelligences, and this womb intelligence would be one of them. Can you talk a bit more about what those three intelligences are?
Absolutely. So we're very used to the intelligence of our mind, or our higher mind, as people say, like this clarity of thought. And that's, you know, physically based in the body, in the head, you know, our source of all our neurons firing off and giving all these, you know, good dopamine hits, and really seeing and understanding things clearly, strategizing, thinking, planning. Fantastic. Love the mind. However, on its own, it can get a little bit floaty, flighty, and over-conceptualize. And so maybe we over-plan for what's happening in the future. Maybe we find ourselves spinning around in anxiety circles, which is very much about that overbrain activity. You might even find you get headaches and that side of things. So let's drop down one step into the body, and we arrive at the heart center. Isn't it so interesting that we're completely happy with mindfulness, but heartfulness, what does that even mean? How do we attune to this center of our body, which is so powerful? I don't know if you've come across the Institute of Heart Maths or their stats on the heart. Like, just imagining yourself breathing in and out of the heart for 3 minutes a day increases your productivity, decreases your stress levels, increases all kind of physiological signs of health and well-being, because our heartbeat regulates our entire body. It's got an electromagnetic field 5,000 times stronger than the brain. It's very, very powerful. It's also the source of our oxytocin. There are, you know, it creates a hormone, oxytocin, to much higher levels than the brain. And that is our source of empathy, connection with others, our feeling of heart to heart, you know, those really fulfilling moments in relationship. That is what we really sing for. You know, it's so important in our life. All of that comes from our heart. What if we can start to attune to the intelligence of the heart in the way we do with the brain? What if that becomes something we can rely on in how we make decisions, in how we relate to others, in how we handle these key points of change in our life? So that's the next intelligence. Then the third intelligence is the one everyone goes, ah! The womb intelligence. And if I was talking to a man, I would talk about that as our body intelligence, and I'll kind of give a reference to both at the moment. So the womb obviously sits much lower in our body. It sits much nearer to all those parts of the body we're not supposed to talk about, and it's, you know, very, you know, unprofessional to even mention at any point. Yet we walk into our offices, into our lives every day with this part of our body fully intact. You know, it's there, it feels, it understands. What if there's intelligence here? So we're quite familiar with maybe gut intelligence, instinct, this part of ourselves. It's talked about a lot, and we can feel it. For women, when we drop into womb intelligence, and we feel from that place, we breathe from that place, there is something, it's hard to almost put into words, it is instinctive, there is a kind of a power in that which is very both stabilizing and activating at the same point. Some people talk to me about it, once they feel that and they feel their connection to that and the earth beneath their feet, they feel so grounded and present that they hold their presence in a different way. They feel more enabled, empowered and safe to make the decisions they want to make and to express themselves in the authentic way they want to express themselves, to not have to move and merge or shape shift to find a way of engaging with life. For a man, it's the womb is at the same point as what's called the Dantian, which is the point that martial artists move from. It's their point of, it's our, all of our physical point of balance in our body. So again, it has very similar connotations of grounding deep knowledge of how to survive and thrive in our ourselves. And it is about physical body intelligence, which speaks in a completely different way. And I think coming back to the how, including all of this, there's not one that's better than the other. When you have these three points of intelligence all working together, all talking to you, you know how to talk to them, you know how to access them, you give yourself this huge grounding of wholeness from which to act and create. So there isn't this either or, if I do this then I'm sacrificing this, if I, you know, my, it all feels integrity. And I think when we really make those decisions in our life, where if you look back at a decision and think, I just knew that was the right decision, wherever it took you, I knew it's the right decision, you generally feel very centered and aligned. And it is because of that kind of wholeness of intelligence.
So how do we use these three intelligences to guide us on this heroine's journey? How do we embrace the heroine's journey in addition to the more conventional, more known hero?
That's a big question. So for example, with clients, I will work with them in a way that incorporates our physical body. Embodiment is key. So the amount of clients who completely freak out when I say, how much do you dance? Do you fancy going and doing a dance class or something? Because literally, as we're trying to find our flow and ease in ourself, which is often what's happening at these thresholds, it feels really, you don't have to step forward or step back. We need that flow and ease in our body. We need to open up those places in our body. And that's not just about going to do exercise and yoga. It's about consciously taking that. And a lot of threshold moments, we go unconscious. But how can we stay conscious in that movement? We need our bodies and our body intelligence. It holds everything. If you're probably, you know, all systems thinking says that, you know, your wider system impacts you. Actually, your wider body system impacts your brain and your thoughts and what you take. So dance, move, pay attention to your dreams and anything which is, speaks to you symbolically that jumps out to you in your life. And you don't know why, but it's just kind of hit you on an emotional level. If you feel something, if you feel an emotion that comes up strongly, see if you can move with it, trace it. By which I mean, you know, where, if that emotion had a place in your body, where would it be? And instead of shutting down that place, breathe into it. And discover what the intelligence is underneath. So as you were describing, Blair, with your experience of rage, underneath that is an intelligence. Underneath that is another layer of wisdom, emotion. And often with clients, we're tracing that back to go and find the real, you know, gorgeous power and opportunity and inner leadership that is in something that might on the surface might look quite different. So it's more than reflection. It's about feeling that. So yes, you're creating a reflective space. You're being more contemplative. But you're also being more inclusive of your whole experience and being. So that's quite important. Vocalizing, speaking about your experience, how you shared it, but that is also how I experience with the clients. We don't often have the words. We're trying to find the words for something we don't have words for because it's not talked about that much. So if you do have, you know, close friends and a place where you can start to find a vocabulary, then you're going to take what is in the subconscious and make it more conscious, doing it sensitively, obviously, with the people that feel that it feels good to do with. Yeah,
fantastic. So a bit like in the hero's journey, there is definitely this this gang, in a sense, the ally. Mm. But they're in the heroine's journey, it seems that actually using them as a sounding board, as a way to, as you said, find the words. Mm. I've really struggled, you know, and I know that the words I'm using are inadequate, and the only way for me as an extrovert to work it out is to say it out loud and try to find something. Mm. So like, I think that also requires time, time, space to allow that to happen, as opposed to this, well, I should be doing something, shouldn't I, attitude, which is so powerful.
Completely. And that pairing, so as you talk about the gang, I talk about it as a circle, and having a circle of women, a collective where we're all different, you know, different life stages, different points in our life, whatever it might be, but we also share common ground. And that's a really interesting place to be. And it can be, you know, it can be groups of men and women. I love holding a circle of women because I think there's something really juicy in that. Because there is a collective intelligence that arises from this space, because we're all there equal, we're all there honoring our distinct experiences, knowing there's power in those. So it's kind of remembering, a bringing back together. So as you were sharing, Blair, you know, it's hard to find the words. Well, maybe someone else has found the words for that little bit. And maybe you have words for another little bit. And when we start to share that collectively, it's, you know, it's amazingly powerful and empowering to do that as a group. And it is a process of remembering. So, you know, literally putting back together parts, things that we know. Like, it's not that you're not having that sense or that feeling, but it's, how do I bring that out now in a way that is authentic for me, that really feels true? And that is a big part, actually, of the heroine's journey, finding that authentic voice.
Claire, it's been so fantastic to talk to you about this. It's, I mean, for me to get my head around it and get to grips with it to the same extent that I feel that I understand the hero's journey is probably going to take a bit of time. But what I'm excited about is that as we embark on the next stage of our adventure, so kind of bring our big trip to an end and embark on the next thing, maybe this is an opportunity for me to focus a little more on what's happening from the heroine's journey perspective, mm-hmm. as just look at it through the lens of the hero's journey.
So thank you. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
That was so fascinating, wasn't it? Did you hear my struggle? The struggle is real, folks. I'm not normally lost for words, but I was a little bit lost for words during that interview, just trying to make sense of it and trying to find the right language to describe what I'm experiencing, and kind of looking back over my journey from the last 6 months and looking at it through a different lens. So hopefully I will become more clear. And as I said earlier, I will share with you when I get more clarity. So what's this thing that's happening on the 14th of September? Well, on the 14th of September, I am doing my first Facebook Live for Psychology's magazine. Now, you will be able to watch it afterwards, but what I would really love is if you can take part live. All you need to do is go to the Psychology's magazine Facebook page and sign up to that, like it, and you'll get all the information about what's going on there, including information about my Facebook Live. It's going to be at 7 p.m. UK time, so that's 7 p.m. British Summer Time, and you can watch it and take part in it from all over the world. You can comment, you can input, so I'll be able to take on board things that are happening live as the broadcast is going out. It's the first Facebook Live that I've done for them, and I'm really, really excited about it. It's going to be all about brilliant gambles. What is a brilliant gamble? What are some of the things that I've learned on my adventure, and how you can get started on a brilliant gamble of your own? So please do join me 14th of September 2018, 7 p.m. UK time, on the Psychology's magazine Facebook page. I can't wait to see you there and have some really, really great input from you guys. Back again next week with another interview, I hope, and maybe some more information about our next brilliant gamble. But for now, that's it. Do stay in touch with us, and I won't go through all the millions of ways that you can do that. I'll just hand over instead to the lovely Ivy Palmer.
We love to hear from you, you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog and find out more about our travel adventure at www.brilliantgamble.com. Sign up to the newsletter and get an advance notice of the classes and programs Mummy is running. Plus, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Brilliant Gamble. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of their own.